Shrink Wrap Radio number 307, Freedom from Pain, with Dr. Maggie Phillips.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Dr. Maggie Phillips, and we'll be discussing the use of Dr. Peter Levine's somatic experiencing in the relief of chronic pain. Maggie Phillips, PhD, is a licensed psychologist in full-time private practice in Oakland, California. She's the director of the California Institute of Clinical Hypnosis and past president of the Northern California Society of Clinical Hypnosis. She's the co-author with Dr. Peter A. Levine of the 2012 book Freedom from Pain. Dr. Phillips has served on the faculties of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, the American and European Congresses of Ericksonian Hypnosis and Psychotherapy, the Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing International Association, the Esalen Institute, the European Society of Hypnosis and Psychotherapy and Psychosomatic Medicine, the International Society of Hypnosis, the Professional School of Psychology, the Society for Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis, the International Society for the Study of Dissociation, the International Transactional Analysis Association, and the University of California at Santa Cruz Extension. Whew. Boy, what a lot. Dr. Phillips has led workshops on hypnosis, psychotherapy, the effects of childhood trauma, and reversing chronic pain in the UK, Germany, Scandinavia, France, Japan, China, and Malaysia, and uses of energy therapies and mind-body healing. She's authored numerous papers and articles in the areas of ego state therapy, redecision therapy, and the treatment of post-traumatic conditions, and is the co-recipient of the 1994 American Society for Clinical Hypnosis Krasilnek Award for Excellence in Writing, and of the Cornelia B. Wilbur Award for the International Society for the Study of Dissociation. Dr. Phillips is co-author of Healing the Divided Self and author of Finding the Energy to Heal and Reversing Chronic Pain. She's also a fellow of the International Society for the Study of Dissociation and a fellow of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Maggie Phillips, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so glad to have you. I was intrigued to learn about your long history in the field of hypnosis. That's an interest that we share in common. My own University of Michigan doctoral dissertation way back in 1970 was on the role of attention in hypnosis and meditation. And I imagine as we get into our discussion that we'll discover that attention plays a pivotal role in the pain work that you and Dr. Peter Levine do.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I would suspect so. Now, speaking of Dr. Levine, you've co-authored a new book with Dr. Peter A. Levine on freedom from pain. And Dr. Levine's become quite prominent for his development of an approach to trauma, which he calls somatic experiencing. And I'm curious how you two got together and whether you were already working in the area of pain before you met him.
You know, actually, Peter and I met when he was, I think he was in Berkeley working after going to school there, graduating with his doctorate in biology. And he was then just starting somatic experiencing and teaching little groups. And he and I were both invited by a mutual colleague to teach a workshop on trauma, and the colleague was supposed to teach also, and I'd never met Peter. So when we got underway, both of us realized immediately that this colleague did not know the first thing about trauma, and it was just we were both really feeling like we needed to do something. And so Peter somehow talked him into running the video recorder for the rest of the the workshop, and so I was immediately impressed with his persuasive abilities. And then got to know him better, and basically he and I taught together for about 30 years, and when we first started talking about trauma, he would of course bring in the somatic piece, and I would bring in hypnosis and other tools that I was familiar with. So actually, when I was early on studying hypnosis, I wasn't specializing in pain at that point. For a long time, I had a broader focus on mind-body healing.
Okay.
And pain was part of that, but not all. But that was not the only thing.
Did I understand you to say you've been working with Peter for 30 years?
Yep.
Wow.
It's kind of amazing.
Time does fly by, doesn't it?
Started by teaching in Berkeley, just teaching some classes and workshops together, and then it got to the point where we started teaching in other places. We taught many years at Esalen, the Esalen Institute in Big Sur together, and now we're teaching on, he and I teach e-courses. The latest one, of course, has been on our book, Freedom from Pain, and so it's just been a very rich collaboration, and we learn a lot from each other, and I'm delighted to have been involved with him in this project.
Well, that's great. Well, since so much of the work is rooted in Dr. Levine's somatic experiencing, perhaps you can take us through that. What
sure.
is somatic experiencing?
Well, so I mentioned that Peter has a PhD in biology, and after that, he went on to get his PhD in psychology. So he actually has two of those degrees.
Wow.
And his interest was in, at least partly, in animals, in animal behavior. And he studied animals in their wild habitats. And he got curious early on. And to me, he was really a pioneer in this way, back in the 60s and 70s, about why animals who are threatened with their lives multiple times every day out in the jungle do not show any lasting signs of trauma, whereas human beings who may encounter one life-threatening experience during their lifetimes often are struggling with the after effects for many, many years. And so that was one of the questions that motivated him to go further, and he's realize that animals have the ability to either they will complete fight or flight responses as they're confronted with threat, or they will shake it off in some way. In other words, the deer in the headlights is a classic example, and I live up in an area where I encounter deer almost every day. And in the evening, if you're driving past them, the headlights, of course, are their trigger that, you know, some kind of threat is approaching them. And they freeze, absolutely freeze. And you can see this. What you can't see so well is once the headlights pass and the threat is over, the deer and most other animals, certainly all mammals, will shake, tremble very, very gently all over their bodies and then run away as if nothing had happened. And so Peter said, this is really monumental, and we need to understand how this works for them and then how we can do some variation for ourselves. So a lot of his work is on studying the fight, flight, and freeze responses, how they get held in the human body because they cannot easily be released, and then how we can develop a program to teach people how important it is to complete, to recognize, first of all, fight, flight, and freeze responses, which are not always obvious, then how we can help to complete them, and then how we can release them, not just through shaking and trembling, although sometimes that happens, but we use various kinds of focusing and breathing techniques.
Well, it's really fascinating that coaches for a long time have said to, you know, athletes who've been injured or whatever, shake it off. Just shake it off.
Yes.
So it's interesting that that's in our language.
It's a good advice. Good advice.
Yeah.
But we don't always know what does that mean.
Yeah.
You know, I think we take it symbolically, and in fact, it's really more helpful literally if we can find a way to shake it off.
Yeah. Boy, I'm thinking of a practice, of another practice, and this is sort of reaching maybe far afield, but people who are into sort of New Age psychic kinds of things often will
advise a kind of shaking
to clear the energy field.
Yes, yes. This is different. And we have a lot of interest, of course, from people who have done different types of yoga, different types of, you know, meditation, mm-hmm. energy, healing, and they're related, certainly. I mean, I think all healing practices are related in some ways, but this is very, very different. We're not... a lot of the, for example, Stanislaw Grof, his breath work.
Yes.
You know, it's very powerful. And what we have found is with people who have been significantly traumatized, it's way too much for them.
Mm.
They can get overwhelmed because their nervous system cannot integrate the experiences they have with that and other kinds of modalities. And so people will often get worse after they have experienced that kind of intensive approach. And, you know, for Dr. Grof, I know he has become very, very sensitive to this issue, and they're much more careful about screening
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, we're looking for something that would work for virtually anyone who's experienced trauma without any risks of making them worse.
Now your book, though, is focuses not as much on trauma as on pain.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about pain for a moment. That's
mm-hmm.
certainly a complex topic. What do we know about pain, and what is it, and why does it sometimes persist for so long, sometimes even after the original injury has healed?
Yes. Yeah, that's a very important question. And what I want to say straight off is that there's a huge link between trauma and pain. And that is one of the messages of our program. And I'll get into that in a moment. Pain itself is a signal that something is wrong. You could say that it's a sign of danger in the body. And it's very valuable to alert us to the fact that we need to pay attention to whatever might be going on and correct it. So in and of itself, pain is very valuable. The problem is, as you were suggesting, is when it persists long after the healing structurally has taken place. And so the person's x-rays may show a big difference, or the CAT scans or MRIs may show that, you know, no, there's no sign of the injury anymore. But it persists because of the dynamics of trauma and how they work in the nervous system. And so, for example, since we know that any time we're threatened, and, you know, this can take many forms, for example, and many people think we're just talking about these catastrophic events, and we are talking about that, but we're also talking about events that are a normal part of our lives, such as accidents, injuries, illnesses, losses, and so forth. So it's very, very common to experience some form of trauma. And what will happen is that we will go into, let's just take the example of somebody who's been in a car accident, because sadly that is very, very common in our culture especially.
Yes.
So the person will have an injury of some kind. For example, I saw a man I'm seeing him now, and he's got a back problem from the car accident. And the car accident itself did not seem very severe, which is why he didn't understand why his back pain was persisting long after, you know, his treatment providers said, you know, you're fine. You know, there's nothing more we can do for you. But still, in fact, not only did he have pain, but he got worse and worse. And he went through all kinds of modifications to try to stay working, including getting a special dispensation so he could lie on the floor to work, he could stand up to work, and that soon failed because the pain was too much. So when I saw him, you know, he was very debilitated and very scared, of course, very anxious, which is another issue that goes right along with pain that we find we have to help people with. So I talked to him and I said, well, you know, it's kind of a mystery to me why you would still be suffering like this when the car accident that you've described doesn't sound like it's that severe. He says, I know, I don't understand it either. And nobody I've talked to has been able to explain this to me. And I said, well, you told me the pain started 5 years ago. What happened in your life during that year? I think it was 2005, so it was a little more than 5 years ago. And he thought for a moment and he said, well, I had this terrible bike accident. And, you know, of course, you know, that immediately indicated to me there's probably going to be a link there. And as he started describing it, his pain got worse. The points where he was injured coincided with the centers of pain in his body. So that's a clear example of how trauma can, you know, pile on top of each other in your nervous system. And if it's not released, if it's just being held in the body, and a lot of the times it is held by fear, which causes bracing in the body. It causes mm-hmm. us to constriction and tighten mm-hmm. against the threat of more pain or more injury. So this is the linkage that we're working with. And Peter and I, each of us have we probably have 70 collective years of clinical experience between us. And we have found almost exclusively, I can't think of an exception, that when we encounter someone who's struggling terribly with pain, they're not responding or making progress, or they have, you know, deteriorated in spite of good treatment, I mean, treatment that makes sense, almost always it's because of trauma that is sort of the invisible partner in contributing to the persistent pain. And so once we help people recognize the signs of trauma in the body, and we have to, you know, do some education there, then we teach them very simple but powerful exercises that they can use to release this and to therefore gain freedom from their pain.
Now, what kind of trauma are we talking about here? Emotional trauma, physical
yes.
trauma, or both?
Yes, all of the above. Trauma does not, you know, affect people differently based on what kind of trauma it is. We have the research now that shows that it's absolutely universal. So cultural trauma will create the same kind of effects as somebody who falls off a ladder or somebody who has a car accident or a terrible illness or loses a loved one. Or loses a series of loved ones would be, you know, more likely. We have found that childhood abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, regardless of what type it is, will have the same effects. And the same effects, you see, are fight, flight, and freeze. We keep coming back to that because that's the hallmark of trauma in the body. And what we've learned is, unlike many approaches who say, oh, well, you know, you just change your beliefs or you learn to clear your emotions or work with those so they're not so severe, basically that doesn't do the whole job. And the reason why is because the body, and especially the more primitive responses of the brainstem, really get activated by trauma. And if the approaches do not reach that level, then the person doesn't get permanent recovery, regardless of what kind of trauma it is. And so we understand that the hallmark of the primitive brainstem, which really is responsible for our survival. So it's a very simple but profound system. It governs our heartbeat, our breathing. You know, every system in the body is regulated by the brainstem, and it's not talked about that much. It's being done so more now, more attention is given. But what really reaches that part of the brain and the nervous system that it's connected to is rhythm. You know, the rhythm of survival and daily life is we wake up, we go to sleep. We're active, then we rest. It's a very dichotomous kind of a pendulum rhythm. This is what Peter has been one of his contributions, is helping people understand the way the nervous system works, because it's always been sort of mysterious. You know, we can label it, we have these diagrams, but most people don't understand, well, how does that relate to me? You know, what does that have to do with the kind of pain I'm feeling right this minute? And so Peter really has bridged that gap in being able to talk about the pendulum rhythms of the nervous system and how we can work with those to shake off the trauma and release it so that we can, like animals, go about our way as if nothing had happened. I mean, that won't be completely true because, you know, it does get stored still. Some traces of it are always stored. But it basically, that kind of shift will really liberate somebody who's been struggling so much with pain.
Now, some listeners might think that what you're saying is kind of sweeping and maybe mm-hmm. grandiose, but one of the things I like about the book is the humility of its claims. You write, and mm-hmm. I quote, "We acknowledge, due to the inherent complexity of pain, that no one method works for everyone," end
right.
quote. And then you also write, "We encourage you to take what helps, even a little, and leave what doesn't." And so many books these days make such extravagant claims that I really like that you've kind of tempered it in this way.
Well, good, yes, because I'll tell you, there's nothing more humbling than to work with people who are really suffering in pain, and you want so much to find something to help them, and they want so deeply to find something that will unlock what's going on in their bodies, and yet, you know, sometimes you can't find it, or
yeah.
Despite your best efforts, it still isn't working the way you want it to. And so we've learned that, you know, the expert on pain is the person who has it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be Peter or me or some other professional, because we don't know what it's like to inhabit their body, and we don't know how they receive certain tools that we use. Even though they're good tools, it may not be right for them. So, yes, we try to hold things, our convictions, lightly. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it leads into another thing that you've written, that self-regulation is the cornerstone of your approach. Tell us about that, self-regulation.
Yes, well, you're asking some great questions, Dave. Self-regulation is the cornerstone of our approach because it leads to empowerment. In fact, the only secure kind of regulation that there is if the person who has the pain is you know, making the attempts to release and resolve it in such a way that their pain becomes regulated, manageable, begins to, of course, decrease over time, and then is to the point where the person can just recognize it as a part of life, as they would if they had allergies. And certain times of the year, they're going to be triggered by the allergies. So what we think is that everyone can learn to regulate their emotional, physical, psychological, spiritual pain, whatever it might be, and they're all combined because, by the way, the pain pathways that pain travels in the body, whether it's grief or rage or fear, or if it's a terrible, excruciating nerve pain, the pathways are the same. The brain doesn't really discriminate very much between, you know, emotional and physical. So we know that there's a universal sort of ground level aspect of pain that we need to help the person with. And once they learn that they can use some, I'll just stay with breathing for a minute. It's not all that we teach people, but it's one of the tools. And there's a special kind of breathing that we, actually several kinds that we work with. Once they can learn to use that so they get reliable relief, and it has to be reliable, it takes a little practice to get to that point, then because they have confidence that they can regulate the pain with the tools that they have, they feel empowered. And that is a huge part of what healing is all about.
You know, earlier I started our conversation referring to my doctoral research on the role of attention in hypnosis and meditation. Mm-hmm. Tell us what the role of attention is in this approach.
Well, you know, most people understand, even though they wish it were different, that for them to reduce their pain, resolve it, release it, really solve it, I guess we could say, on a permanent basis, that they need to be able to focus on it. Now, sometimes this is counterintuitive. In the case of people who have experienced a lot of dissociation, dissociation is an automatic response, so you can't intercede with that and stop it. You're going to dissociate. For example, the common kind is when car accidents happen, people will go into this sort of shock state, even if it's not very severe accident. And there's some level of confusion that goes along with that, spaciness that goes along with that. And, you know, I tell the story of a pretty bad accident I had about 15 years ago. And when I got out of the car, I knew I was, you know, pretty much okay. And I was trying to go and talk to the other driver. I walked back to his car and I couldn't remember why I was there.
You know,
I just didn't have the focus that I needed. And I went back and forth between our cars several times until I got my driver's license and my other information together. But that's kind of a common report, and it's a form of dissociation.
And I can really relate to that.
Dissociation is part of pain, because even if the person doesn't dissociate in relation to the event that caused the pain, which usually happens, often the pain becomes so traumatizing after a while that they dissociate from the pain. And what that means to them, of course, is that they may escape feeling a little bit of pain in the moment, or maybe a lot of pain in the moment. The downside of that is they cut themselves off from body resources that could help them resolve the pain. If they can't focus on their body experience, they can't really release the pain. And so that's our message, is that you need to learn how to focus in a certain way that is, you know, gentle, and that isn't overwhelming to you. And we give a lot of guidance about that in our programs. We have in the book, there's a CD that comes with it, and that has 20 practice exercises. Very simple, most of them lasting less than 5 minutes. And then we have a standalone audio program, which is 2 CD set, and that has 4 or 5 tracks on the kind of information I'm giving to you right now to help people understand how pain works, why it's hard to release, why they may still have it after all this time, and so forth. And then it gives 24 practice exercises. A few of them overlap with the book, but it's designed to help people who really, some people can't even focus enough to read a book. You know, when they have severe pain, it's very hard to focus. What we're looking for is something that can help people in different formats. We have MP3 downloads so that people can put it on their iPod or whatever their listening device is. It can be portable and go where they go. But they're going to have to learn to have a simple focus and to learn the language of their body to a certain extent. Now, what I mean by that is we talk about the language of sensation. We don't know body speak, so to speak. We don't know how the body communicates. You know, we've never learned that. And so we don't know. And so we're trying to teach people how the body communicates with them. That's one of the first things we do. And one of the first skills in the body that we teach is how to re-inhabit your body. So if you've been in pain for a long time, you need to learn how to reconnect with your body. And a lot of that is going to be on focusing and to help people focus not just on the painful areas, because usually that's as far as they get. But we also help them start focusing on the neutral areas of the body and then eventually the more positive, resilient, expansive areas of the body, which anyone in pain, even severe pain, will have. It's just that they don't know how to pay attention to it.
Now, your book has only just come out, I believe. Isn't that right?
That's right.
So I wonder, have you had any feedback yet from people who've been using these audio tools that you've provided or you know, with the book?
Yes, we absolutely have. They're, of course, are just starting to come in. But the first week the book came out, one of the people who studied with both Peter and me sent me an email and said, I just wanted to tell you that I was, of course, curious about what you and Peter would create together. So I bought your book and right away. And she said, I was just keeping it because I thought a client will come along that has a pain problem and maybe it'll help them. And she said, the same day, I ran into a very good friend of mine who was really struggling with terrible pain, and I gave it to her. I said, here, I don't know if this will help you, but, you know, here it is. And all she did was to listen to the very first exercise on the CD, and she was amazed. She called me up. She said, I can't believe how this has shifted my pain.
Wow.
I feel different in every way. And she said, and then I went out and bought five more and gave all of those away, and everyone I've heard from has been, you know, very, very happy and reported amazing differences.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, one of the things that you talk about is getting stuck in what you call the pain trap. What do you mean by
that? Wow. Well, yes. What will happen is that, and this is so pervasive, we work with this pattern with every single person that comes to us, and we suspect it happens just across the board in all pain patients. But what will happen is you start off by feeling, you know, like, I'm surely I can get better. I don't know how I'm going to get better. And then what will happen is, this is just an example, your pain may increase very quickly. And as your pain spikes and you don't know any reason for it, it's like it comes out of the blue and it's attacking you, then what will happen is you get anxious, and the anxiety causes constriction in the body, and the constriction in the body makes your pain worse. And when the pain gets worse again or continues to get worse, you have more fear. And the more fear you have, the more constriction or bracing there is in the body in reaction to that, because it's all wired neurologically. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens then, and you get more constriction, more bracing, your pain then goes up again. And so it's just this endless, vicious cycle if you don't learn how to interrupt it.
Yeah. You know, a huge social problem that's confronting the country right now are all these returning veterans who are suffering from both PTSD and chronic pain. And, you know, and I've encountered various approaches to working with trauma, and I'm just wondering if these tools are really having the impact that they need to have with something on this scale. And I'm wondering, are you two doing anything to kind of interface with that problem?
Well, I would say we want to. Peter has worked with several returning veterans who have severe PTSD and pain. And he has found that our program works extremely well with them. And for example, there's Ray, who is a veteran from Iraq, and he was involved in an explosion of a landmine that injured him but killed several people, including his best friend. Mm-hmm. And so he had terrible pain and just grief and many, many multiple problems. And I believe Peter worked with him for three sessions and got amazing results.
Wow.
So not everybody is Peter Levine, it's true, you know, but I think what I have found is that with some guidance, some folks, when you have PTSD combined with pain, serious PTSD, you're going to probably need a little bit of guidance or coaching. That being said, some research has been done by Belarus Napperstack. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
No.
But she's a giant in the field of imagery, and she's doing a lot of work with veterans. And what she's found is that the veterans find that using MP3 audios are significantly more valuable and helpful to them than a live session with a professional.
You know, I didn't catch her name. Can you give me the spelling on that?
Belarus?
Yeah.
BellarutH. Napperstack is Napparstek. I believe that's right. If you get close on Google, you'll find it.
Okay, thanks for that info.
So we then extrapolate from her research, and we hope we, of course, get the resulting data when we're able to set up studies to really follow this in more scientific ways, that our MP3 program, which is exactly the same as the audio, the CD audio program, we're hopeful that can work magic, if you will, for people who are in this situation. And often it's too overstimulating for them to sit with a professional because, you know, they're afraid of being judged. They don't want to deal with their, you know, talk about their trauma because that brings it up for them again and makes it hard for them to stay stable. And so what we're offering has nothing to do with looking at the trauma. We're not even concerned about the details of it. It's more learning how it's being held in your body and how you can unlock and then release it.
Well, you've got a great dissertation study here for somebody who's at the end of their psychology program and maybe who has an internship in a VA hospital. And I could see somebody like that setting up a program using the CDs, maybe either exclusively or almost exclusively.
Yeah.
And doing before and after rating scales, et cetera. So
well,
if anybody's
Dr.
listening,
Dave, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I hope somebody listening is in that category. You know, you're working on looking around for a dissertation or a master's level study. And, you know, if you are, please contact us. We'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, definitely. How does your own work with hypnosis, EMDR, and I think maybe energy tapping?
Tapping.
Yeah, how do those approaches articulate with somatic experiencing? Is there some underlying commonality?
Well, you know, probably the underlying commonality is that we're always working with energy when we're working with the body, when we're working with emotions, when we're working with our experience in the moment. So with mindfulness, no matter what your work you're focusing on, the energy level of it is always there and is always impacted. And, you know, we talk about energy and somatic experiencing. It's just, you know, it's a little bit different in that we're talking about the energy that is sort of bound up in freeze and staying in the freeze response, where you're at some level you're still in shock from what happened to you, and your body is just really in major lockdown. So there's energy that's being, a lot of life energy that's being held in that constriction. And so we're, you know, of course, looking at how to release that. And there's commonality in the energy psychology world. We don't release constriction or things that block our energy flow in the same way. You know, there's tapping. There's meridian therapies that use lasers and different things, and I am familiar with all of them and sometimes use them. But, you know, in somatic experiencing work, we're using primarily breathing and awareness of specific body sensations and how they change instead of that to get to the same place, which is to be able to release what is blocking the energy system and the mind-body system so that we're back at optimal health again.
Okay, now one of the things that you advocate is the keeping of a pain journal.
Uh-huh.
And boy, would I really want to focus on and write about my pain?
Well, I tell you, we get a lot of resistance with that. I deal with that a little bit in the book, but what happens is... people have said, oh, you know, somebody made me keep a pain journal before, or I don't like to write, or whatever it is that they're going to complain about. And what I try to do is get them to try it first for just 1 week. I can think of two patients right now, both of whom have very different problems. One had severe pelvic pain due to endometriosis, a severe case of it, and to multiple surgeries for that. And the other one is a man who has irritable bowel syndrome and a lot of different kinds of pain that goes with that. So, you know, in both cases, neither of them were aware of what their patterns were. You know, when their pain went up, went down, mm-hmm. It was all just kind of this random experience for them, which is not in the direction of empowerment, you know, of taking charge of your pain and being able to regulate it. If you have no clue what's happening to you, this is really a good tool. So I said to both of them some variation of, you know, I really believe that even if you've used journals before, you will learn something you have not known about your pain. And would you be willing to try it for 1 week just to find out? And so both of them did. Both of them learned significant things about their pain that they had not been aware of and led to the solution. And so, for example, the woman with pelvic pain learned that her worst time, she thought she was fine in the morning when she first got up. In fact, she was not fine in the morning. Once we started tracking it, we learned that her pain was high in the morning because she had a hour-long conference with her boss at work, and she was new in the job and was just really worried about her progress and how she would, you know, how she would do and needed the money. So she was very stressed, and her pain was worse then. And once she realized that her morning was a vulnerable time, we then could use some strategies to help her prepare for that and to be able to shift it so that then her, not only did her morning pain get better, all of her pain got better. So that's just a quick example.
Great. I love examples. Now, we've talked about trauma resulting from war and from automobile accidents. What about resolving the traumatic effects of past surgeries or invasive procedures that were, you know, designed to be helpful with this stuff? But
yeah, Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. It's such a common concern today. Peter and I both have worked with many people who have suffered the effects of surgery, either surgery that did not go well, there was a problem or an error in some cases that caused the person to have more damage than before they had the procedure. And that's, of course, really horrible. We've also worked with people who the surgery went fine, as far as anybody could tell. It seemed to be, you know, textbook. And yet they had pain afterwards that they couldn't manage. It was so bad. And then they couldn't get out of that pattern. And we've also worked with people who just still, after many years, I mean, as much as 10 years or longer, this is an experience, meaning the procedure or the surgery, that they never recovered from. And they're just, it crashed their whole life, in a sense. Mm. So it's hugely important. And our message is not to try to convince people not to have surgery, although we're really big on working with folks and talking with them and probing around to see what the motivations are to make sure that this is important for them to do. In some cases, they cannot get better if they don't do it. And so we're on the side of, if you're going to have surgery, if that's the best decision for you, then we want to make sure that we work with you in advance so that you're prepared, so that you have success, and so you have a secure pain plan so that your pain stays manageable. In some cases, it's much easier, much better than you think it will be, and that then you are able to regulate whatever happens so that you can move on in your life. So that's our approach. And we have a section in the book on creating a personal pain plan. And you need to do this in collaboration with the surgeon or whatever medical professional is going to be doing the procedure that you're having. And it covers such things that most people don't think about. For example, making sure that they have secure connection to someone in the structure, the office structure, or the team structure of the professional that's working with them, so that they can, if their pain goes up or the medication isn't working or they have, you know, bad effects on the medication, that they're not just relying on personnel in the hospital who are overwhelmed, and a lot of errors get made there, as we know. So they get a direct line somehow, whether it's an email, whether it's a cell phone number, whatever that can be worked out, so that they know going into this that if something unexpected happens, you know, they're not going to be tortured for days on end until something can be done for them. We also help them look at making sure that they have an advocate that is with them and, you know, if need be, goes with them, follows them all the way through. So they will go to their meeting with the surgeon, will go with them to their, you know, pre-op appointment, will be there at the hospital or clinic while the procedure is done, and will be there to go home with them, be there with them, and help them with whatever is needed there. So, you know, there are many different parts of a pain plan, but the idea is we don't want any gaps. We don't want any gaps where I have any number of stories, and I'm sure you do too. Most everybody seems to, mm-hmm. where people have, gone home, let's say, or they've gone to a rehab facility without the proper medication orders. And maybe it's a holiday weekend, maybe their surgeon is on vacation and they didn't know he would be, or whatever. And meanwhile, they're just out of luck because nobody is going to, you know, help them in any kind of timely way. And we found that by and large, it's very important to get ahead of the pain and stay ahead of the pain. You don't want to get into a hole with pain where you're at a maximum level absolutely overwhelmed, terrified, because that sets up that pain trap we talked about a few minutes ago.
Yeah, that everything you're saying makes so much sense to me, and it's actually soothing to think about.
Yeah, good.
Even though I'm not contemplating surgery.
I'm glad it's soothing. That certainly is what we're looking for.
Yeah, that's really good. Now, I have the impression that you've also worked with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, which don't, on the face of it, seem to have any relationship to trauma. What can you tell us about those?
Sure. Well, actually, there are studies now, especially with fibromyalgia, that show the high correlation between childhood trauma, usually, and the fibromyalgia that develops later on. And so what I have several patients who struggle with this, and what I tell them and what I believe is that fibromyalgia and some of these other disorders are actually systemic manifestations of trauma reactions. So in other words, what will happen to a person who has it is that their nervous system has been dysregulated. In some cases from birth, actually. If somebody has had a birth trauma, a known birth trauma, the dysregulation of the nervous system can start right there. And then somehow it may not have been given the proper care, or they just, quote, grew out of it, but then they encountered another type of trauma, like abuse or loss. And it just kept on coming. It's like waves and waves and waves of trauma. We also talk about everyday little T trauma. For example, living with a parent who is relentlessly critical and often devaluing or even shaming, and how that can be just as debilitating, if not more so, than somebody who is, let's say, physically abused. I mean, we don't want to diminish one in favor of the other. That's not the point. But the point is, all of them are put people at risk. And I'm treating several people now who just, oh my goodness, they've had fibromyalgia, then they've had lupus, then they've had problems with their heart. I mean, it's just like system after system of the body is affected in this way. And what we have found, again, is that when we work with these the tools such as the breathing work that we do, which is very gentle and very it's most people will describe it. I did it for the first time with somebody yesterday, and she said, "This is the first time I've been out of pain in months."
Wow, how wonderful.
If not years. It is wonderful. And I do want to say, and you talked earlier about humility, we're not guaranteeing that this will work for everybody. We believe it can work for almost anyone. And it may be that the timing isn't right for you, which is why I also, both Peter and I actually incorporate other tools from time to time. For example, I use energy psychology work. I use hypnosis, imagery, EMDR at times, because I'm looking for what matches the person's level of readiness and what they need at the moment.
Well, you know, that's probably a great place for us to wrap it up. That's a great closing statement. So, Dr. Maggie Phillips, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
You are so welcome. I so enjoyed talking with you, Dave.
Good.
I had to admit, you know, when I saw the name of your program, Shrink Wrap Radio, I thought, oh my God. And then I actually mentioned it to a couple of people, and they said, oh, it's great. You know, you should check it out. It's great lectures, podcasts, wonderful things. So it's all true. And I've enjoyed talking with you and getting to know you a little bit, and I hope this will be helpful. Dave, thank you so much. This has just been a great pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
I hope you were as stimulated by this interview with Dr. Maggie Phillips as I was. You know, in the past, I've received several requests from listeners to interview Peter Levine. I'm afraid he's been too hot a property for me to snag, too many speaking engagements, too much travel, and so on. So I was glad when I was approached by the publicist to interview Maggie. Little did I know just how good a stand-in for Peter she would be. Her 30-year association with him, as well as her own very strong credentials, put her right on target for our purposes. You might also be interested to know that I actually have a prior interview on somatic experiencing, which I've been waiting for the folks who run the Wise Counsel podcast website to put up. It's with psychologist George Lau, and I've been waiting for it to come up in the Wise Counsel rotation. I think it might be the last interview I conducted for that site, and it may already be up by the time you hear this. I certainly hope you're not suffering from chronic pain, but if you are, I think this book/CD combination by Drs. Levine and Phillips could be a very wise investment. And even if you're not personally in pain or trauma, you might know someone who is, or you might just want to have this book on your bookshelf against the day you or someone you know may need it. That's what I plan to do. And if you do order a copy, I hope you'll use the Amazon.com widget in the right-hand sidebar on our site.
You've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio for a while now. You've been entertained, thought-provoked, inspired. And you've donated how many times? Thought so. Wouldn't you like to make a change? To give just a little for all you receive? It's easy. Just hit the big green button on the website to keep Dr. Dave on the airwaves. Shrink Wrap Radio, proudly brought to you by you.
Thanks to my friends down under for that wonderful promo, and thanks to all who have clicked on that big green donate button. I finally have a new Wise Counsel podcast to announce. It's an interview with George Lau, PhD, on somatic experiencing. Talk about synchronicity. It just so happens that this interview with Dr. Lau on somatic experiencing has come up at the very time of today's episode with Dr. Maggie Phillips, which has been all about her work with Peter Levine and somatic experiencing. I couldn't have planned it this way if I had tried. Now, Dr. George Lau is a Southern California clinical psychologist who's been using the somatic experiencing approach with a variety of patients suffering from trauma, and I think you'll find the interview a perfect companion piece to today's interview with Maggie Phillips. Unfortunately, I believe this is the last of the interviews that I'll be doing for Wise Counsel Podcast. It was a good run, but it frees me up for more Shrink Wrap Radio interviews. I'm happy to announce that longtime New Zealand listener Brandon Dennis has stepped forward to co-moderate our Yahoo group. Now, we just need you all to jump on that group and engage in some passionate shrink wrapping with one another. You'll find a link for joining that group in the right-hand sidebar on our site if you're not already a member. And thanks, Riney and Brandon, for your help with this. I don't have any new transcripts to announce, but Renata Saliki, who's done some and is working on one right now, gave me a great tip to share with you current and would-be transcribers. You can download a free version of a transcription software program called Express Scribe. It makes transcription a lot easier because you can make it scroll the audio back some given number of seconds when it gets ahead of you. And you can either do that by purchasing a foot pedal to control it or by setting up a keyboard command. Not only do they offer a very functional free version, but they also support both Macintosh and Windows. So all you transcribers and would-be transcribers, Google Express Scribe, and check out the free version for whichever platform you're on.
Hi, this is Kira Van Nuys Martin, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Kira, beloved daughter and mother of my three beautiful grandchildren. So let's check out some recent emails from our listener community. First, we hear from Bella, who writes, "Hi, I was listening to your podcast on Cronenberg's Dangerous Method and was surprised to hear that Sabina Spielrein returned to Russia. Read more on her story and found out that the detail of her death from a firing squad in the siege of St. Petersburg was not correct. She died in Rostov-on-Don after being herded into a synagogue with her two daughters and other town Jews and perished there in August of 1942. Nobody really knows a precise date of her death or any other details. It was also mentioned by John Beebe that she had a chance to leave Russia and didn't take it. Being from Russia myself, I don't believe that's correct. To leave Russia under Stalin was practically impossible. However, Sabina did have a chance to flee from the advancing German army, the way, say, my Jewish grandmother fled with my father and his sister from a town not so far from Rostov-on-Don. It appears that Sabina didn't believe in Nazis' cruelty and chose to stay in her hometown. Thank you for your podcast. It's an eye-opener and has been a wonderful source of ideas and reading material. And that's signed, Bella. Bella, thank you for setting the record straight and for your own interesting thoughts about the whole Sabina Spielrein story. Next, we hear from longtime listener Joan and transcriber, I should mention, Joan in Australia. And she writes, "Hi, David. Thank you as ever for the wonderful episodes you continue to publish for us. I have just heard an interview on one of our local broadcasts that I'm sure you'll find fascinating. I don't know if you still follow the work of Natasha Mitchell, who used to host All in the Mind. She's now hosting a more general daily program called Life Matters, but her love of psychology still shows through, and she does include interesting psychology segments from time to time. It would be a pity if you missed this interview with Professor Mark Solms. It's only about 15 minutes long, but it's a great conversation about dreams and neuropsychoanalysis. It links Freud's work with contemporary neuroscientific research." And then she gives me a link to that interview. You can Google it, Life Matters, Professor Mark Solms. I'm sure you'll find it. Joan goes on to say, "Natasha mentioned that Mark Solms is the author of The Brain and the Inner World, An Introduction to the Neuroscience of Subjective Experience. It's likely you're familiar with Professor Solms' work, but Natasha is such a skilled interviewer, I feel sure you'll find it worth listening to. All the best from Joe." And Joe, thank you so much for that link. I had not heard of Professor Solms' work, and it really is right up my alley and fits well with some of the recent podcasts and would have fit well with the course that I just finished teaching in lifelong learning. I did go and listen to that. It was about a 20-minute interview with Mark Solms. And as a result, I sent out an invitation to him for an interview just today. So I hope that he responds and that he's willing to have the interview. And I'm sorry to hear that Natasha Mitchell is no longer doing All in the Mind. That was a wonderful podcast, and she's a great interviewer. And I had invited her to be a guest on Shrink Wrap Radio some long time ago. She said that she was very shy about that sort of thing, but said that she would. But I've tried to follow up with her a couple of times, and I think her shyness won the day. Next, we hear from Charlie, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I hope you've been well. It's been a while since we've spoken. I continue to be an avid listener to the podcast. Yay! I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work you do!" Exclamation point. I love it. He says, "I'm curious if you've ever had any experience with transcendental meditation or if you have spoken to anyone who has. There are plenty of people who swear by it, and I found boatloads of legitimate research that support their claims, research specifically on transcendental meditation over other meditation techniques. However, part of me feels that it's A, too good to be true, and B, a little cultish. While other meditation training programs are either free or by donation only, TM costs $1,500 up front. I'm seriously considering taking the course as a means of improving my current meditation practice, which is hit or miss, calm my mind and find more focus, energy, and compassion. If you know anything about it, I'd really appreciate your perspective best. And that's from Charlie. Well, Charlie, I don't have any really specific information on TM. I've never studied it myself. I have had lots of students. Well, lots is too much, but I have had students who have been TM students and followers. And I recently watched a very interesting Oprah Winfrey episode in which she went to this town in Iowa where the whole community is organized around transcendental meditation. And it was very impressive. My impressions are that TM is an effective approach to meditation. I, too, share the perception that it's somewhat cultish, and I, too, am a little bit put off by the fact that it costs $1,500. However, if you do spend $1,500, then that will probably, cognitive dissonance will require you, will probably make certain that you get more serious about meditating regularly, or you will have wasted your money. The other possibility and approach I'm really drawn to is mindfulness meditation. I'm sure you could find some other group and become part of a community of meditators. And I think if you were part of a community, that would help you to maintain the discipline. So I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails, as always, to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on my phone at 206-337-0622. And don't forget that you can go to the Apps tab on our site for information about getting our iPhone/iPad/iPod Touch/Android app, and you can contact me directly through that. Thanks to Dr. Maggie Phillips for her perspectives on somatic experiencing and freedom from pain. My next show will feature me. You might remember my recent interview with dream worker Kelly Walden Sullivan. Well, she also has a podcast, and she recently interviewed me for her podcast. And in that interview, I talked about a very long run of synchronicities, which culminated in my finding my biological father, whom I had never known. It feels a bit self-indulgent to focus so much on my own journey, but I made my own recording of the interview for those of you who might be interested. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.